Hello and welcome to the DiMartini Show. This is the podcast for people who love personal development. If making constant progress is one of the most important measures of your life, if you love to learn about universal laws, human behavior, and empowerment so that you can make sense of the world that we live in and empower your life, and if doing something that makes a difference is the core of what drives you, then you've tuned into the perfect podcast with Dr. John DiMartini. He's a human behavior expert with over 48 years of research into human behavior and performance. And what he shares across all of these episodes will give you an incredible advantage in the different areas of your life. This week, we take a look at a really fascinating topic, emotional intelligence. You'll find this eye-opening and informative, and it will give you a new perspective on some of the common misperceptions that many people have regarding emotional intelligence. Before we get started, if this is your first time tuning into the show, click the subscribe button now, because that way we'll be able to notify you every time we upload a new episode. If you love what you learn in this episode, then we'd love it if you would rate this podcast and leave us a review. And lastly, share this podcast with anyone in your network that you know would value the opportunity to learn this content too. So grab a pen and paper and let's get started with today's presentation, The Keys to Emotional Intelligence. Enjoy.
Around the 1960s, with a movement in psychology, there was a consideration of a different way of looking at intelligence, a different division of intelligence, in addition to the IQ that had been around since almost the time of Einstein. And there was a debate whether there was one form of intelligence that had many facets, or was there multiple intelligences? And there was a movement to the idea of dispersing them out and say there's bodily intelligence, there's musical intelligence, mathematical intelligence, and they start fragmenting all over the place. But one of the divisions of intelligence that were considered was emotional intelligence, the ability to be able to perceive and interpret the reality of life, respond accordingly with the various emotions, and measure those emotions, manage those emotions, and use those emotions for communication, leadership, social development, et cetera. In addition to abstract conceptions, which is more of a IQ. Intelligence has many different meanings going all the way back to the nous of the Greeks, and many of them have teleological objectives. Is there some final cause and some objective and purpose, like an acorn becoming an oak tree behind the various aspects of intelligence? But today I'd like to just talk about a practical emotional intelligence. So this is where you may want to take some notes. You're interacting with your environment. And as you do, your hierarchy of values is interpreting it. You have a pulvinar nuclei in the thalamus that represents a gating, filtering mechanism that's filtering your reality, your sensory perceptions, and discerning which ones to include and exclude. As a mother goes into a mall, her highest value is her children, and she's a mother, that's her highest priority, then she will spot things for children, but overlook things for business or sports or things of anything to do with the children, she'll notice. So we spot things. So our hierarchy of values, our set of priorities in life, filter our reality. And then once we filter that, we've excluding and including different things. I call it attention deficit and attention surplus, awareness. We automatically are doing that according to what we think will give us the greatest advantage. In fact, every decision we make, every perception we make, every action we take, some believe is strategic to accomplish what we feel is most important in our life. So if that's the case, then learning the art of perception, decision, and action according to values, and learning how to manage those and the responses to the environment, which is people or events, would be the key to mastering life, you might say. Now, when you meet somebody, you have two things coming into your brain. You have the receptors, visual receptors, auditory receptors, smell, taste, tactile, et cetera, receptors, taking information. There's about 100 and something senses that you're actually picking up on that you may not be aware of it. Semiotic sense of smell and aromatic sense. All these are coming into the brain through these nervous receptors. And then what's happening is all of the subconsciously stored emotional experiences in the past that were polarized and judged in the past as painful or pleasureful, avoiding or seeking, excluded or included, is now imposed on that. And it goes from receptors now to perception. And so your perception is now tainted by your values and all of the experiences that you stored in the past that have been imbalanced. Anything you saw that was more pleasurable than painful or more attractive than repulsive got stored as an impulse towards. And anything of its opposite or anything you've associated with pain or challenge, you tend to put an instinct to avoid. It's a prey, predator, seek and avoid impulse and instinct system. And all of those experiences and memories, we call them episodic memories, are imposed on the new information coming in through receptors. And the receptivity and the perceptivity joins together into associations in the brain. They are sometimes joined together into concepts and apercepts, but they're become more and more abstract and integrated and something that's not even tangible. As Immanuel Kant says, that there's phenomenological things that we can touch with our senses, and there's nominological things we can abstractly conceive in our mind. And that entire scale of receptivity, perceptivity, conceptivity, apperceptivity, has emotional overlays. And the emotions are nothing but the ratios of those perceptions. So think about that, the ratio of your perception. If you have a ratio of 5 positives to 20 negatives, you're going to have an instinct to avoid it. If you have a ratio perception that's 10 positives and 1 negative, you're going to have an impulse towards seeking it. And you're going to have, because of those ratios, and because those are down in the survival animal area of the brain, the subcortical area of the brain, the amygdala, the desire center, they'll fire off because of larger diameter neurons that are necessary for survival and quick response. They'll fire off before you can think. And if you don't have any governance over that, it can run you. And that's kind of a emotional dysregulation syndrome. You're basically overreacting to things and having emotional responses that are extreme. So if you perceive something with your receptors, or receive something with receptors, and then perceive something that's reminding you of that's highly charged in the past that hasn't been neutralized, you can create an overreaction. You've seen this. You've seen people overreact over trivial things and then have no governance over it because it'll fire with an emotional feeling before you can think. And as a result of it, you can react. And then you go, ooh, then you judge yourself for that reaction because of a social idealism that you've subordinated to about how you're supposed to be, which is a moral hypocrisy in most cases. And then you have these emotions, and then they're stacked up on top of emotions. And those emotions are based on previous experiences, the subordination to outside ideals and norms that you're supposed to live by, your own personal experiences, the fantasy you've made about your life that you dream about that may not even be real, and the real objectives that you hold inside that are. All of those are woven together into an experience when you perceive. But the ratios of those perceptions are taking all that information in and creating a net result. And that emotional ratio will determine whether it's a primitive part of the brain firing for emergency or the advanced part of the brain, which is basically there for governance. You have a forebrain that has the medial prefrontal cortex and the executive center that is involved in governing those emotions. In fact, that area of the brain is involved in self-governance, self-management. And an individual that has more moderate, more neutral, more balanced ratios of perceptions awakens the forebrain and gets the executive center going, which then uses glutamate, which is a stimulatory transmitter, and GABA, which is an inhibitory one, and regulates those emotions of impulse and instinct. So it's really calming down from previous perceptions and neutralizing them and causing you less reaction. The individual who has the capacity to moderate those extreme, subjectively biased emotional reactions has, in a sense, a regulatory function, and they basically are considered high EQ, high emotional quotient. They have the capacity to not react and let the external world run them, but to use the external world to master their lives. And that's where there was a teleological significance to emotional intelligence, because it has a purpose. It has a purpose of mastering your life, fulfilling your life. You've heard me say in some of my presentations, when you can ask the question, how is whatever is happening to me on the way, not in the way, that's when the executive center comes online. When you see it in the way and not on the way, that's probably when your amygdala and your animal brain comes online and you go, my God, get out of it. Now, we need those emotions when you're in a true emergency. A true emergency, about to get hit by a car or train or somebody's about to stab us or something. But the reality is that that's very rare. The number of times we actually have true alerts in our life that are really life-threatening are very minimal. Most of the time, we've exaggerated those things and caused reactions and then had to learn to calm them down. And our ability to adapt to things that are seeking and avoiding, the resilience factor that we have, measured by our heart rate variability, which is a measurement of how lateralized our sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system become when we're under fight or flight or arrest or digest, when we're able to regulate those and keep those moderated, we have the greatest heart rate variability, which means we can adapt and have resilience to no matter what happens to us and quickly regulate it back. And if we can have a stimulus, realize it's just a false alarm, and then go right back into centering ourselves, that's mastery. That's, in a sense, a high EQ. It's also associated with a high IQ. High IQ is also the ability to abstract. Now, what that means is the farther you go up into the forebrain, the more associations you have, and the more you have governance of those associations, and the more you can take, no matter what happens to you, impulsively or instinctively, things you seek or avoid, and neutralize them in your mind. So this gives rise to a question on how do you actually master emotional intelligence? What's the key to it? Well, here we go. Let's go down the rabbit hole a bit. I've been working on developing a methodology on this literally since I was 18 years old. And I'm 66, going on 67 now. So you can tell that's been a bit of time on it. So what's interesting is if you perceive somebody, let's say walking towards you, and you perceive them and they have in your receptors data, information that is correlated with past pleasurable experiences, you may associate with them, I can trust this person. The oxytocin is up high, the vasopressin's up high, the dopamine's up high, and you go, I can trust this person. I feel connected to this person. I'm not threatened by this person. I'd like to get to know this person. And then what happens is it's because you have associated in the subconscious mind where you store those pleasures or pains, stored those that way. So you tend to put them on a pedestal and you tend to be gullible to the pleasures that you've associated. That may not be who they actually are, but because of your past experiences, you're overlaying in your perceptions an assumption of who they are. You may discover that within a minute or so, or an hour or so, or a day or so, or some longer period of time, a fatal attraction that's not the person you thought. You found, oh my God, there's a lot of psycho behavior here that you didn't expect. Or you may meet somebody that's highly resentful to, that you're resentful to because of past associations or remind you of a certain type of person by the way they dress or the way they move their face or something. Any cue could do it. And then you have this subjective bias initially on there, and then you eventually discover, oh, they're pretty lovely people. I have to get to know them. So anytime you put somebody on a pedestal, it's because you're too humble to admit what you see in them is inside you. And it's because you have stored in your subconscious mind associations that are more impulsive and pleasurable to you and more supportive to your purpose in life. And that's why you engage in them and you open up to them, kind of like you want to eat them and consume them like a prey. You want to get to know them and get up close to them, get to find out what they're made out of, consume their existence. But if you meet somebody that you resent, it's obviously because you're too proud to admit what you see in them is inside you, and you're disowning that. And it's because of past associations you've had stored in your subconscious mind of pain, avoidance, challenge. They're reminding of that. So you don't trust that person. You want to avoid that person. You're skeptical of that person. You're not gullible. You're skeptical. Now, it has nothing to do with what's out there. What's actually out there may be a lovely individual, but you've got in superimposition of it, of all your subconscious baggage. Whenever you go into a relationship, bringing that baggage into that relationship, and that relationship is going to have to learn how to deal with that. And their ability to manage that and own what they see in you is the key to their emotional intelligence. See, the term empathy, which is really a reflection of what you see in others inside yourself, if you can ask the question, what do I perceive in them? Where do I do that in me? And what's the benefit to me if it's, we see it negative? And what's the drawback to me if I see it's positive? I can take the ratios of perceptions that have been skewed because of my subconscious baggage, and I can clear my subconscious baggage and respond to them in a respectful way without being infatuated or resentful, and just get to know the individual. If we infatuate with somebody, we don't know them because we're conscious of the upside and unconscious of the downside. If we resent them, we don't know them. We're conscious of the downside and not conscious of the upside. And whenever we're looking down on them, we tend to exaggerate us, so we're not being ourselves. We're not authentic. And when we look up to them, we're minimizing ourselves and we're not being authentic. And we're not knowing them and we're not being authentic. And then we have an emotional reaction and we are ungoverned. And that's low emotional intelligence, because now we're distorting our reality. We're living in our past subconsciously stored baggage, and it's running our life. And we're now having low emotional things. And this is not great for leadership. This is not great for relationship. And so going into our executive center and going in there and becoming more objective and seeing things in a balanced way and asking questions that allow us to see what we see in them inside us. And if we're conscious of the upsides, what's the downsides? If we're conscious of the downsides, what's the upsides? Asking those questions can stabilize us and raise our emotional quotient and allow us to have not only EQ, but IQ, which is an abstraction. Because the farther you go up into the forebrain, the more you have associations, which are really nerve fibers that are more connected to all the nerve fibers. See, in the very primitive part of the brain, down at the spinal cord, and the peripheral nerves, it's an all or none firing process. There's no gradation. But as you go up into the brain, well, the spinal cord and into the brain stem and up into the higher areas of limbic brain, the cortical brain, and right up in the corpus callosum, you get more and more associations and you make more networks there. So you have the ability to be able to see, no matter what stimulus it is, to have any response. And the variety of responses that you have at your options is what is really EQ. If you can take a response and turn it into an opportunity, or response and calm it down, and you have the ability to take any association, make any association with it, and govern that, you have mastery over your life. It's not the external world that's extrinsically running you, it's you running you.
Listen up. Imagine knowing with absolute certainty that your life is working for you, that you're on track and that you're making progress towards the goals and dreams that you desire every day. If you've been an avid listener to this podcast, you'll have heard Dr. DeMartini mention his signature program, The Breakthrough Experience. It's a two-day weekend seminar where he shows you how to take everything that you've been learning on this podcast and put it into practice so that you can gain the shifts that you most desire for your life. If you would love to transform your life, and if you've been a little bit uncertain where to start or how to get there, then join Dr. John DeMartini at The Breakthrough Experience so he can show you how. What you'll learn in these 2 days is truly life transforming. It's time to put the power in your hands to create your magnificent life. To find out more, go to demartini.fm/seminar. You can also access the link in the show notes below. We look forward to seeing you there. And now let's continue with this episode.
So there's some really powerful questions, which I've been teaching in the Breakthrough Experience with the DeMartini Method. And I really believe that this method is one of the keys to mastering emotional intelligence and raising up IQ, both at the same time. So the next time you meet somebody that you have this skeptical sense of avoidance to, or skepticism, and you may resent them, the thing to do is, what specific trait, action or inaction, do you perceive them displaying or demonstrating that you despise most, dislike most, or want to avoid most, that you resist most? And don't go, I don't know, it's just something about them. You won't get anywhere when you do that. You won't have any governance if you do that. But if you narrow down what exactly is the behavioral action, in most of the case, it's going to be something they did too much of or too little of. You tend to judge people by commissions or omissions, but sometimes it's a physical trait, the way they wear their hair, the way their nose, the size, the teeth, missing a tooth or something. So if we judge them, if we narrow down what that is and ask what specific trait, action or inaction, Do you perceive this individual displaying or demonstrating that you despise, dislike, resist, hate most? And narrow it down. Define it in 3 to 5 words. Not run stories, not to do psychobabble, but just write down what the trait is or the action is that's really concise. And then you go and reflect. And reflective awareness is one of the highest levels of awareness. You ask yourself this question. All right, John, go to a moment where and when you perceive yourself displaying or demonstrating that same or similar specific trait, action, and action that I despise most. And go and identify where you did it, when you did it, who did you do it to, and who perceive you doing it. Now, I've gone through the Oxford Dictionary, and I went through 4,628 different traits, and I found out that I had every one of them. I was nice and mean and kind and cruel and giving and taking and generous and stingy and honest and dishonest and deceptive and forthright and loyal and betrayal. If I look at my life, I have done every single one of them in different moments of my life. So it's not a matter of if you've done these behaviors, it's a matter of where and when and to who and who's perceived you demonstrating them. Because unless you can identify what you see in them inside you, there's no connection, no empathy, there's no way of communicating with that individual. Otherwise, you're going to be too proud or too humble to admit what you see in them is inside you, which means you're inauthentic and you're just skewing the distorting what they are, and there's poor communication, and that's a low emotional quotient. And that's overreaction and underreaction. And you store it in your subconscious mind, and then you're like an animal running around, extrinsically driven. But reflective awareness and looking at where you've done it and looking at the forms in which it's done and owning it quantitatively, qualitatively until it's equal. And I am certain that's doable because I've done it on 100,000 people and I've demonstrated it over and over again. And almost every week in the breakthrough experience, people say, well, I don't know. I can't do it. I don't. And then 10 minutes later, they find it. So don't waste your time being addicted to pride of the fantasy of who you are. Get true about who you are and discover that you're everything. I always say at the level of the soul, nothing's missing you. At the level of the senses, things appear to be missing in you. And anything you appears to be missing in you are things you're too proud or too humble to admit you have. And as long as you're too proud or too humble to admit you have what you see in others, you're going to have a low EQ and a low IQ because you're basically sitting there assuming proudly that you don't do that or shamefully that you do that. And you're sitting there exaggerating and minimizing yourself instead of being yourself. And people want to be loved for who they are, but if you're not willing to be who you are, how are you going to get love for it? But by going in there and owning it and finding out exactly reflectively where you do it, you immediately stop the judgment. You immediately stop it and bring the polarity of the perception from a high weird ratio of 10 to 1, 5 to 1, 9 to 1, to actually look at, oh, I've done that too, which automatically starts to calm it and get more objective. Then to go to the next question, another question. Now go to a moment where and when you perceive this individual actually displaying or demonstrating that specific trait, action, and action that you despise, hate, or resist. And at that moment and from that moment to right now, how has it served me? How has it benefited me? What did I learn from it? What did I not have to do as a result of it? What's the upsides to it? Because all traits serve, or they would go extinct. Now, I've studied Sumerian and Egyptian and Greek, and around the world, I've studied China, and I assure you, there hasn't been that many differences in the last 5,000, 4,000, 3,000 years in human behavior. Human behavior is still the same stuff, and we haven't gotten rid of any traits. So it's not like you're going to get rid of any traits. A lot of this fantasy out there in self-development is that I'm going to get rid of these traits and only gain these traits. No, you're not. If you look very carefully, all the things you thought you were going to get rid of in your life are still with you. They come out when you need them. So it's not about getting rid of a trait. It's not about trying to gain a trait. You already have all the traits. You're just unconscious of them. And you've morally hypocrisized yourself by thinking you're going to get rid of half of them. How are you going to love yourself if you're trying to get rid of half of them? It's wiser to go in there and own the traits. That's why I went through the 4,628 traits and own them, because then that is a preemptive strike to reduce the probability of judging another person when I first meet them out of subjective biases of my past that I haven't been willing to work through. So by going in there and identifying how did it serve you, you find out the thing that you thought was negative that made an instinct to avoid into something that's neutral, that you're poised and present and running yourself from your executive center. Because once you have a 1-to-1 ratio, your executive center runs you. Once you have a 7-to-1 negative to positive ratio, the instinct and the external world runs you. If you want the external world to run you, you'll be a follower in life. If you want the internal world to do it, you'll be a leader in life. That's why people that have a high emotional quotient can make great leaders and can have empathy, because they can see and reflect and see that they see in others inside themselves. Point the finger at them and you got three pointing back at you. And the same thing on the admired side. You go and identify what specific trait in action do I admire most about this individual that they display and demonstrate. And then go to a moment where and when you perceive yourself displaying or demonstrating that same or similar specific trait in action until it's quantitatively, qualitatively owned. And then go in there and find the downsides to it. Because if you're infatuated with somebody, you're conscious of the upsides, unconscious of the downsides, and you're blind to the downsides and you're ignorant of it. And that's ignorance and emotional intelligence and ignorance. If you have a lot of ignorance, you got a low emotional intelligence because you are not able to see both sides and you're letting the external world run you. But by going in there and finding out where you've got it to the same degree, and then going and finding out the downsides of it, you calm down the fantasy and the nightmare. The resentment is the nightmare. The fantasy is the infatuation. And instead of letting those occupy space and time in your mind and run you at noise, you've probably had nights where you've been trying to go to sleep and you're highly infatuated, excited about something, or highly resentful and can't sleep because you have a dysregulation syndrome going on because of ratios of perceptions, because you haven't monitored and managed your emotions, because you're not letting the executive center come in there and with glutamate and gamma, calm down the impulses and instincts, or the instincts and impulses, and calm them down and regulate them and bring them back into balance. If you have a real emergency, you need that amygdala for that. But that's rare. The real reality is that the people you meet are your hallucinations from subconscious baggage that you never cleared. In the breakthrough experience I go through, and I show you how to neutralize that baggage so the world's not running you, you're running you. So you can have high EQ and high IQ. A high IQ is an abstraction, the ability to take an event and bring in associations that are not necessarily with that event and going in there and think of other experiences of how that could serve you when you're looking down on it or how it could be disservice to you. And when you can do that with a forebrain and to take all the association fibers in the brain and use them all from previous experiences to have a broader perspective, literally, the forebrain is a broader perspective where things are neither good nor evil, neither black or white, neither infatuation, resentment. They're a combination of the two. That's what we call love. Love's a synthesis between these theses and antitheses, a synthesis and synchronicity of opposites where you have a 1-to-1 ratio and you're actually poised and present and purposeful and patient and productive. And that's a very high IQ and EQ. And they correlate in those moments. Because now you have an abstraction and you have a glimpse of the big picture of the universe, the divine master plan, as Newton would describe it. And you also have the capacity to not overreact. A lot of times we overreact because of our emotional baggage in the past, and we know it. We've watched ourselves do it. And that's absolutely unnecessary. You have the capacity to ask new sets of questions, because the quality of your life is based on the quality of the questions you ask, and ask questions to make you conscious of the unconscious information that you've ignored. So if you're infatuated with somebody and you're ignoring the downsides, you can ask the question and look for the downsides, not be ignorant, not be unconscious, be fully conscious. Our intuition is constantly trying to take our low emotional quotient, emotional intelligence, and bring it to a high level. And when it brings it up, it brings it into a balanced state where we're inspired by our life. We're self-actualizing, as Maslow would describe. This is where it all started in the 60s. These individuals were looking for a self-actualized life where they're living with a purpose and meaning, and extracting meaning. In fact, the extraction of meaning is high EQ. The ability to take, if you're infatuated with something and you're able to find the downsides of it, you bring it back into the mean. If you're resentful to something and bring in, find the upsides to it, you bring it back into the mean. The mean is between the two. And now what's interesting, and then you've extracted out meaning out of your existential existence that you're extrinsically run by, and you're able to see things as they are, not as you subjectively projected onto your reality and then overreacted. And the more traits you can own and the more things you can own within yourself, the less likely the world around you can cause buttons. Your buttons aren't anything to do with them. People, beware of your language. Listen carefully. Anytime you say, well, they made me feel bad. No, they didn't. Your subconscious storage of information projected onto their receptive activities an association that made you feel those sensations. It's not outside. You know, Epictetus says that we go out and we blame others. That's when we're first on the journey of self-development. Then we blame ourselves, and that's when we realize, oh, it's a subconscious baggage. And then when we have emotional intelligence and IQ, we then realize, you know what, there's nothing to blame. We've now neutralized it. We see the hidden order in it. We've extracted meaning out of it, and we're now grateful for it. Anything you can't say gratitude for and thankful for is baggage. Anything you can say, thorn is fuel. So the ability to ask questions, to equilibrate the mind, and bring ourselves back into a poise state instead of a poise ion state is the emotional intelligence. And it allows us to have empathy because now we can realize that what we see in others inside us, and that's what true intimacy is. People that confuse an infatuation and a high dopamine rush where you have a lust and you want to, you know, jump all over the individual, we think that's intimacy. That's actually not. You're actually having an affair with a fantasy that you've concocted from your past subconscious storage and the fantasies you picked up from your journey instead of actually getting to know that individual. That's not intimacy. Intimacy is the ability to have perfect reflection and to realize that whatever you see in them is inside you. And then realize that whatever is there is something worth loving. When you can actually own the trait, balance it out, appreciate and love the trait, regardless of the trait, and realize it all has a purpose, because otherwise it would have gone extinct. It's here on the planet for a reason. When we can see it all on the way, not in the way, we've mastered it. That's why I ask a question, how specifically, you know, if you're not filling your day with high priority actions, you're not going to maximize your brain. You're not going to get blood and glucose and oxygen into the forebrain in the first place. And if you're not prioritizing your perceptions, supportive or challenging, pleasurable or painful, and neutralize them and bring them into the forebrain, you're not mastering your brain. But by asking questions that equilibrate the brain and liberate us from the subjective bias and allow us to get objective, we get to the truth, we realize that there's nobody worth putting on pedestals or pits, but everybody's worth putting in hearts. I'm amazed at how many people come up and they say, well, so-and-so's a real ah. And then you go and meet them and you go, I don't think that at all. Because the way they're interacting, because of their baggage and the way they're responding to them, when you have high emotional quotient, you own the traits, what you see in them. And as a result of it, you can reflect on them. You can understand them. You're less reactive to them. You're less judging of them. You're more receptive to them. You understand that, yeah, I do the same thing. Who am I? And you end up having more reflection, more equity between you and them. And when you have equity between them, you have equanimity within you, which allows you to be authentic. And when you're authentic, that's the most fulfilling thing you can be. You want to be loved and appreciated for who you are. That's the way to do it. By equilibrating your perceptions of others and equilibrating them within yourself, you liberate yourself from the false facades, the masks, the personas, the facades you wear, and you get to be you. And that's really what we're driven to do. From all of my research on the brain is doing everything it can to try to get you with homeostatic mechanisms, trying to get you authentic. And really everybody in your life is actually coming to bring that to your awareness. The person you're infatuated with, the only reason you're too humble to admit what you see in them is inside you is because the truth is you have everything you see in them in your own form, in your own values, but are too humble to admit it because you're comparing your actions to theirs and thinking theirs is better than yours instead of honoring where yours is. When you do, you realize they brought this into your life to make you aware of what magnificence you have. And the same thing on the side where you're resenting people. They're reminding you of something you're feeling ashamed about that you haven't found the benefits to in yourself or them. And they're giving you an opportunity to have emotional stability again by knowing how to ask the right questions. So the people around us are coming into our life to point out what we haven't loved and owned inside ourselves to give us an opportunity to liberate ourselves by asking quality questions, which is what the DeMartini method in the breakthrough experience is for, to help you dissolve those subconsciously stored impulses and instincts that are running your life so you can liberate yourself to get on with your mission. Your mission is different than your passion. Your passion is about avoiding pain and seeking pleasure. It's an animal response. It means to suffer if it's in its etymology. It's basically because if you infatuate somebody, you're going to try to change yourself into being like them, which is futile. If you're resentful, you're going to try to change them to be like you, which is futile. But if you love somebody and let them be who they are so you can be who you are, that's not futile. That's utile. That's where we maximize our communication skills. Let's maximize our business skills. sustainabilities, maximize our income, maximize our relationship dynamics. We get to self-actualize our life by mastering this emotional quotient or emotional intelligence, sometimes called. So since the 60s, there really isn't anything new there. I mean, I can go back and trace some of the same information back farther, but since the 60s and then into the 80s and 90s, Goleman and others come along and write about it and published a book, and it became kind of a main thing, emotional intelligence. But it's really what your brain is doing when you're living wisely. In fact, love and wisdom, philosophia, automatically maximizes emotional intelligence. That's why studying the great minds and standing on the shoulders of great leaders and finding out what they did is going to reveal to you that their behavior is just self-governed. That's it. They didn't let the external world run their life. They allowed themselves to reflect, reflective awareness. By asking the questions I gave you, how specifically is whatever's happening on the way, not in the way, and calming down the infatuation, resentments, and becoming fully conscious of the unconscious so you can actually go out and lead, you wake up your leadership in your life and you give yourself permission to do something amazing and shining. And that will expand your space and time horizons. That will expand your game and where you want to play. And if you really want to make a difference, you're not going to make a difference fitting in and trying to be somebody you're not. You're going to make a difference not wearing facades, but being authentic and taking down the you might say, the masks. And getting authentic, that liberates you to be yourself.
Well, this was just a small sample of what Dr. DeMartini has to share. If you'd love to continue learning from Dr. DeMartini, then please click the subscribe button so that you're notified when we add the next episode. If you'd love to find out more about Dr. DeMartini and his work, then please log on to our website, drdemartini.com, and use the online chat function to talk to a member of our DeMartini team. We'd really love to get to know you and to understand what you're wanting to achieve so that we can best guide you through the appropriate education session to achieve your goals and dreams. We'd also love to invite you to join us in the DeMartini Stay Inspired Facebook group, which you can access by linking to demartini.inc/inspired. Our goal in the community is to help you to clarify your vision, stay focused and inspired, and take the appropriate actions to empower all seven areas of your life. So join us by linking to demartini.inc/inspired. That's it for this episode. We look forward to sharing more inspiration from Dr. DeMartini shortly. Until next time, stay focused.